This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hey friends, this is Tim McKenna and you're listening to another episode of Signal 337. So I'm doing it again. I'm working on my own personal website. It seems that I do this every single year at some point where I just start fiddling with what I want my site to be like, updating the branding, updating the content, and do I want it to be more interactive where I'm making posts on the regular basis, or is it just going to be really flat and just a digital landing page for where you can find me online? And it's always one of the harder projects to work on because I just don't know how I want to position myself. I think this is a problem that all designers have at some point in time because we are thinking about how we want to position, how we want to market ourselves, and there's so many different facets that we want to discuss and be able to show off that trying to come with a concise message, a concise narrative, is a little difficult. I know for myself, I've got many interests professionally that all weave into my major thread of being a design leader, but it doesn't always make for a very clean narrative when I talk about all of these different areas, especially around project management and engineering and just communication stuff. They're all important, but to have a very clean narrative is important. And as I've been looking at my old content from my site from years past, I had a number of export files of my blog content that I was really curious as to see what did I write a long time ago. And it's funny because I've had my website for over 10 years now at this point, and I have some really old content, and it was like strolling down memory lane. Some of it was fondly remembered, others was like, oh dear God, why did you ever write that? But there was one particular article that I wrote that I have some feelings on, and that's what we're going to discuss in this episode. The article was from 9 years ago, and it was talking about designers' chance to have a seat at the table. And if you don't know what I'm talking about in this regard, just Google designers' seat at the table. It's a metaphor for the fact that for a long time, designers have felt like they haven't been taken seriously enough in the value that they bring to a business and their goals, their outcomes, and how they can really help to shape businesses' offerings. I was writing this article about 9 years ago, and I think it was actually right at the beginning of my foray into leadership. When I started becoming more of a people manager and having more of a strategic role in an organization versus being told what to do, how to do it, when my deadline was. I was at a really interesting place myself personally, and this was one of the first roles where I really had like direct reports. So I was reading the article, and it was really interesting because it was talking about how the value that design brings to think about the customer experience, to think about the brand narrative, to think about our services being something that enables people's lives. These are all still tenets that I still truly hold dear to the work that we do. But the angle that I was going with in this article was talking about how designers need to start talking the language of business, need to really show up and understand that their work is more than just designing things, creating products and services and the experiences there. We have to look at things more holistically, and we have to think about the impact and the scalability of our work. And so this article was really much more of a call to arms for designers to basically mature. And I laugh, maybe a little bit cry, but I think we've gotten there. As a whole, I think the temperature of the industry has changed dramatically in the last 10 years or so. I would say I'd heard the whole metaphor of designers having a seat at the table about 12 years ago. So this would be around 2009-ish at that point in time. And I was still in my I was still in my first job, actually. I was a number of years in my first job at International House, where I was the in-house designer, working on everything from marketing campaigns, looking at our website, improving how our website worked, and also working on some of our digital services. I was a direct report. I had a marketing manager that I worked with, and I had a lot of ideas about how we can do certain things. However, I was, in my own admission, I was a peon. I was just like, tell me what I need to do, and I'll do it. But since I had been there for a number of years and had established a rapport, my thoughts, my advice, my thinking about some of the stuff was taken into more consideration about how we do it versus just doing it. So that's exactly right around that time I started hearing from other designers, people I looked up into the industry, about designers having that seat at the table. And I could see why we weren't taken seriously at that point in time. And I think for a majority of designers, and I'm speaking in very broad stroke generalities here, I'm not saying that designers never had a seat at the table. Look at Apple. They've done pretty damn good with design leadership and being a strategic partner. But I think for a lot of organizations, designers were seen more as the service. Do this, create this, execute this. And in a product or user experience space, we were much more focused on that early iterations, that early generative research, and being able to provide value. If you worked in the marketing or advertising space or the brand space, you were working closely with an account executive and working closely with the client to really create something that was memorable. Or you were highly sought after and your ideas were just golden. So there's many broad strokes in between that, but either you had the autonomy because you had the presence, or you weren't. You were still very much a doer versus a thinker in this regard. I'd say in the last 10 years, though, the landscape has changed dramatically. Chief design officers, executive creative directors, VPs of design, senior VPs of design, customer experience is a much more defined discipline and school of thought than it was 10 years ago. And look at the proliferation of design roles now at companies where design is part of the foundation. Look at how many other startups had design co-founders that were part of their formation. So I see the proliferation of designers having high integrity, highly valuable strategic roles in companies being more common than not anymore. Sure, there's still some holdouts in certain industries, still few designers as more of a service than as a partner, but for the majority of organizations, for the majority of industries, design is seen as a foundational pillar for the success of that industry. Why do I laugh and cry about this? Looking at my old article and thinking about where we're at today, I wonder what we've given up along the way. I wonder what we have lost for ourselves as designers strategically thinking. Where am I going with this? Let's think back 10 years. Let's think back about where designers more often than not thought they didn't have a voice. We were doing a lot more interesting work to try to prove our value. We were doing a lot more research. We were doing more free-form research. We were doing more generative explorations. We had a little bit more of a freedom to explore different ideas and different concepts. And while product management was continuing to evolve and mature around the same time as well, designers had a little bit more freedom because we weren't left alone until we were told, hey, do this. I feel that's where the problem started, is that designers could see the value that they bring to an organization through the activities and the thinking and the workings that they do. I think about 10 years ago and the amount of different hats designers wore. 10 years ago, I wasn't really completely aware that user experience research was its own dedicated discipline. I know now that it totally was. However, the majority of people that I interacted with were designers, but they were also researchers. They had to wear those hats in their organizations because they just didn't have the budget and the headcount to have these more specialized roles. So many of the people that I met as I was transitioning more into user experience and product design, we wore a lot of hats and we tried a lot of things and we failed a lot, but we also succeeded a lot. We were able to come up with best practices and how we can work. And we learned from each other. It was a great time for learning about how everyone does their things a little bit different, how we can take a little bit of how you're doing something over here and a little bit of how you're doing something over here, take it together, remix it, and make your own process or make your own way of doing things. And that was a golden time. However, we were always striving to have that voice where the work that we were doing was valuable and can help to inform how a company would interact with its customers, create better services and products, and create better narratives. Let's talk about today. Today, designers absolutely have a voice at the table. They are helping to, direct how an organization is going to create its products and services and do so in a way that will, I hate to say delight, but prove value to our end users, our audience, our people that we're trying to serve. And I think about the proliferation of the technology and the needs for design, especially in direct-to-consumer or business-to-business applications, business-to-government applications. Looking at how much design is now incredibly important in just the healthcare field, about creating better patient experiences, about creating easier ways for healthcare professionals to connect information and do their work so they're not having to spend endless more hours doing scribing and other menial tasks where they can get back to helping with patients. And thinking about the proliferation of medical technologies that, again, help healthcare professionals and patients be more successful and be more proactive. So just looking at just healthcare alone, design is incredibly transformative. Where are we at now? We have a seat at the table. We have leadership that is from the design background or is a design adjacent. You think about more design-minded product managers that become in charge of design. So we have this voice now, and if we harken back to my article from 9 years ago, I kept talking about how designers need to speak the same language of business so that we can introduce our language of experiences, so that way we can create a bridge. But I wonder if we went too far. There are many organizations that have very formulaic, very process-driven design processes, applications, and frameworks. And the fact that we have so many frameworks of how we do our work, is that the necessary outcome of all the work that we've done previously? Is that the next evolution? Are these frameworks incredibly helpful? Now, I'm not advocating and saying that design thinking frameworks or human-centered design or how we go about this work isn't helpful, but it does seem interesting that we have so many ways of approaching the work, and there's stupid arguments about which way is better. Regardless, it doesn't really matter because ultimately, however you're serving the customers, in a way, that's going to be the best way that works for you. But we are now arguing over the minutiae of how we do our work and what value that we do bring. And we are now so closely associated with product management. Have we come full circle again where we are just the service of how product works? I don't know. I really don't know. And I also have a very narrow view into the wider world of design around this. Again, my experiences and my observations are, so 10 years ago, we were striving to have a seat at the table. What were our goals? We wanted design to be taken seriously. We didn't want to be seen as the quirky creative types who didn't like business sitting in the corner working on their Wacom tablets and bitching about the newest update from Adobe. We didn't want to be that. We wanted to be seen as a strategic partner, someone who can help create the strategy and help direct how we do our work and make sure that design was carried throughout the entire process instead of just being the one-stop aesthetic view of things. I think that was a general gist of what we were trying to achieve as an industry. And regardless if you're in a government role working on a product or a service, if you were in the private sector, if you were in the public sector, it didn't matter. I think that was a general consensus, a general feeling that we had. Not saying that everybody had this same feeling, but that was a general temperature that we had as a field, as a discipline. Now we are in positions where design celebrity is a thing. Honestly, you cannot go online without looking at UX Collective or go on to Spotify and just see the most recent designer podcast. Like, designers now have a voice at the table, and we are getting that voice out beyond the table and talking to everybody. And there are many folks that follow these design celebrities. Hell, I'm doing it right now to maybe like the 10 of you who always listen to this show religiously. So I am no better here, but so many organizations now have codified design and how we do things. We have such mature processes in place. And I wonder if we have stripped away some of that magic that we were trying to show, if we stripped away that and replaced it with process, overdone process. I don't know. Am I feeling salty about something? I don't know. Probably a little bit. Probably not. But why am I bringing this up? A number of my colleagues in other industries, some friends that I have that work at other companies, we talk about the hiring process. And we talk about how, just first off, just how shitty hiring is and why haven't we fixed that as a designer? So, first point there. But we talk about some of the applicants and the candidates that are coming in that seem robotic in their application. You seem robotic in their interviews about how they approach a problem. And the spouting of just the same application, the same process, the same framework. It's almost like they're regurgitating the same IDEO article over and over again. And to me, it does not sound like who they are. I want to understand how someone thinks. I want to understand how someone approaches things. I don't want to hear someone just regurgitate another Adaptive Path article, or I don't want to hear someone just regurgitate, here's the Double Diamond framework. Like, I don't really care about that, because as I'm talking with them, I can tell that they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And they're hoping that they're just saying enough of the right buzzword and keywords in the interview that we are going to hear and be like, oh, you know this, so that's a good thing. I'd rather much more understand, how did you solve a problem? What were the monkey wrenches that you ran into? How did you deal with them? And when I have had applicants and candidates come through, I could tell the difference. I could really tell the difference from someone who has had an experience that they've gotten through, or are just flying blind and reading almost like a script at this point. Now, that's not to say that everyone who's new into the field hasn't had much experience. Now, I've interviewed individuals who are 1 year or less, and they've just talked about how they would go about solving problems and having a very human-centered approach to things. They would think about how they would try to solve it. And that is great. That tells me how they think. Instead of just regurgitating with a few little flares of, this is the Double Diamond process, this is how I work, I would like to start with discovery and spend a lot of time understanding and building empathy with our users, like that, to me, it doesn't mean anything. Like, it just is regurgitation. However, in our leadership, is that what we're looking for? Is that how we want to hire? Do we want to hire all carbon copy clones of each other? And does that reliance on frameworks and what we've done the last 10 years to codify design and have that seat at the table, now is it a detriment? I don't know. This is a very open-ended question, a very open-ended argument and discussion here. I'm not sure. Now, I know that I don't know everything. God knows I know I don't know everything. And some of this is a little biased in my experience. I talk with other individuals and other organizations, and I try to understand their approach and how they feel about the hiring process, how they feel about how design is done at their organizations. And there's been some resounding themes and trends that I feel, if you would have asked us these same questions 10 years ago and told them this is what the future looks like, I think that we'd all be a little... And some of those themes are the complete nullification, or let's just speed the hell through research. I am a huge advocate for research. I'm a huge advocate to try to understand what the hell are we trying to solve for? What is the opportunity? I think research should be a ongoing, constant practice. General, generative research, and also specific, targeted research to understand a certain problem space. I believe every organization needs that. And I absolutely do mean every organization. I don't care if you're a vertical SaaS platform. I don't care if you're a direct-to-consumer application. I don't care. I think that consistent, generative, and targeted evaluative research needs to be an ongoing thing, and you just need to fund that. We as designers always often talk about the need for research helping to inform what we're trying to solve for. And this has been a trend that I've heard is that we don't have time for that. We have to hit the market. We have to have our deadline set. We need to get this out. We have to have an informed opinion. Okay. You know what makes a really good informed opinion? Having fucking research. Now, I understand the counterpoint here. I understand the need for speed. I never thought I'd be saying that in an episode, but I understand the need for speed here. I understand the need that as designers, we have an absolute duty to be thinking outside of the craft of our work and be thinking about the business problem, understanding the space. And this is where I think designers really need to step up more, is that as designers, we have to have a really well-informed understanding of who our users are, what the marketplace is like, what problems we're trying to solve, so that we can have an informed opinion based on best knowledge that we have available. Now, what would make that better is if we had research. However, we may not always have that time. So it is incredibly important for us as designers to get outside of our own heads and ensure that we understand the marketplace. We understand who our customers are. We understand the constraints and the requirements. But that shouldn't be the norm. We shouldn't always be in a position where we have to pivot and really be working insane amount of hours and insane amount of speed on everything. That was glorified through the last 10 years of startup mentality. Fail fast and fail often. I don't know how I feel about that statement anymore, because I feel like failing is a way to learn, and failure shouldn't be something that we're scared of. I think the true definition of the scary version of failure is when you stop trying. That's, to me, true failure. But failing at something is just the first step at getting better at something. I just don't like that word failure or fail, because there's just too many negative association, too much negative connotation with it. But part of the issue with this fail fast, fail often, or let's not even worry about getting it perfect, let's just get something out. The problem that I have with that is that then when things don't work out, oftentimes it comes back to design, is that we didn't do something correctly. We didn't think about things fully enough. And that's where you run into this dissonance, where design's always trying to understand what the problem is, what's the opportunity, why are we doing this, who does this serve, what will this do for our organization. I feel like designers start asking those questions more, and we were told basically to shut up, move, start working on things. So I feel like there's a miscommunication. Like, we're at the table, we're asking the right questions, however, there's still some like mentality holdouts that design is a service and we need to be moving at the behest of our other business counterparts. I feel like this is a missed opportunity, and I feel like this is a reason why we're not as successful as designers, is that we want to advocate, to understand and have empathy and understand the problem space, but we don't have that investment into research yet. Now, again, broad strokes here, generalizations based off of observations that I made, this does not hold true across the entire industry. I am sure there are many organizations that research the hell out of things and are very meticulous, and everything is informed by research. So I'm not stating that my beliefs and statements here are 100% accurate and representative of the entire industry. But I think more often than not, what we're running into is that there's a lot of areas to be improved. And one of the areas that we can work better with our business counterparts is to really advocate for research. Another area that I see is very promising and continues to help, but can dangerously overstep and become a little overzealous, is design operations. We work in an industry that has a fuck ton of tools, and almost like design celebrities, there is so many more tools out there available at our disposal that we didn't have 10 years ago. So as many voices we have advocating and talking about design, we have just as many tools, if not more. You think of the rise of many tools that have come and gone and that are here or mainstays. I remember when UX Pin was like the hot shit that came out, and it was pretty good. I actually really liked it for a long time. And then Sketch was a thing. I didn't always work on a Mac, and I didn't want to pay for Sketch. And then Figma, I remember being one of the early beta users. I think I was the 14th person to sign up for an early beta version of Figma back in 2014. Look at all the tools that we use. That's part of the problem, is that we've got so many goddamn tools. Who's going to work, how we're going to work, how we're going to share stuff. And if we wanted to have a seat at the table, we need to effectively communicate with everybody. But much of our tools were so focused around how we do our work, it didn't really take into consideration how anybody else would work with our tools and work with our artifacts. So as you've seen the proliferation of tools, you've also seen how different designers work on different ways, and we needed process for us to be able to work effectively, and tools was a way for us to be able to codify, like, here's the tools, here's the technology that we use. Great, cool. And design operations, in one facet, details how we work as designers, how we work with our tools, what tool set do we use, how do we go about doing our approvals. I mean, as its name, it operationalizes design so that all in a company, all the designers in one company can all have the same effective communication, can work together and work smoothly. It was all around how we can collaborate effectively. Again, broad strokes, very focused here, but design operations is a great thing. We no longer have to worry about how Billy's sketch file over there isn't going to be opened on Mary's PC over here. She doesn't have to run an emulator and all this stuff. Like, it just said, here's, thou shalt use these tools, and here's how we're going to use them. Even some of the best design operations talkings and principles and stuff talked about, like, file naming conventions. And I was like, that's pretty direct and targeted, but helpful. Now, the problem that I see is the increasing productization of design operations, where operations in any organization, regardless of the director of operations and how a company actually organizes and works together, is a great thing. However, when you start to blend, you know, how product and engineering are doing things, then you start getting design operations being influenced and informed and then being directed by how these other disciplines work. Case in point, I think this will be a discussion point for everybody, is the use of Jira for designers. I like Jira. It's a ticket management system. Great. I like Jira for that. I like Jira when I'm a developer, when I'm working on things. It works great. I don't like it for designers. I think too often we try to shoehorn designers into using the same tickets and associating our tickets with the engineering epics or stuff. I feel like there's too much there. That's too much of a dissonance there. And the thing is, I actually like Jira. You know, this would be something different if I didn't like Jira and I don't know how to use it. However, I feel like too often what's happening is that we need to align as designers to how engineering does their work. And that way we have transparency, we can track velocity, we can see what the capacity looks like, and it's this overarching view of just what are we doing each day, how are we working on it, and it doesn't build in enough time, I feel, to say, hey, we have heads down time for research, or we have heads down time for iterations. I've seen it where some progressive designers have put in tickets where they're like, I'm making a ticket for just heads down time, for iterations, for these things, and they weren't tied to anything. You couldn't really measure, like, what are you actually doing? There was no outcome. It's not like engineering where you can say, here's where I started, here's where I moved, here's the difference in my code file. Some of the work that we do is not as cut and dry as engineering. It's hard to qualify some of our time and quantify that time, and I think that kind of forcing designers to use certain tools that aren't really tailor-made for them is difficult. And I think that it's the wrong move. And sometimes design operations will go very far into saying, here's how we're going to use this engineering tool or this product tool as designers. And I get the gist of it. I get the understanding of it is that we're trying to work more collaboratively. However, I think sometimes it can go a little bit overboard, and then design is not valued as its own department, as its own capability. It just becomes an addition to engineering, and it becomes a service again of, oh, we just enable the engineering teams, or we just enable the product teams. And yes, we do that. However, we lose our identity as design. We have operationalized ourselves out of design, and now we're just an ancillary service to serve product, customer success, marketing, and engineering, and other departments. That goes into this whole dichotomy then of design as a partner. And I've talked about this with many of my friends, is that it really depends on the organization that you're working, how they view design, how they view the value of design, and how they see it fitting into their process, into what their organization's values are. And I think it really does come down to values and mission. If you are in a very product-driven organization, you might have a lot of product designers, and they might be treated more as a service to how product management is going to create these roadmaps, these strategies, these milestones, and deliver on these different services and features. This is where you hear, with some organizations, we're treated as a feature factory. We are just churning out new features that, do they solve a problem? Do they address a problem? Do customers really want this? And that feature factory is something where you speed up the arc of a business's rise and decline, basically. I've seen this, I forget exactly how it was referred to this, but with a new service, you're starting to gain traction, you're starting to get recognition, you're starting to get customers, you really become the peak of how an industry works, and then slowly you start to decline, and this is where disruption comes in. When you become that name in the industry, you can get disrupted pretty easily. I remember 8 years ago, InVision was the shit. This tool was one of those early tools where you could create presentations, walkthroughs, you know, pretty simple prototypes of your designs, and you could put your sketch file in there, you had your Illustrator file in there, and this way you could walk through your designs of a prototype with stakeholders, and you can still work within that tool. And some of it you could do directly in InVision, and some of it was in your own files. But InVision was the shit. Like, you couldn't have a conversation with any designer at that point in time without bringing up InVision. And now it's more like InVision who? Because they've been disrupted. They went really far. They tried to solve a lot of problems, but other companies and other products came out that were truly solving the needs of their customers, of designers. And now Figma is like the 800-pound gorilla. And for a long time, as it on its way up, you know, there was questions like, oh, is Adobe going to buy it? Because they've had five other products like it that all failed. And Adobe XD is its own thing. It's pretty good. InVision was the 800-pound gorilla before that. And before that, UX Pen was pretty damn good. So, like, this constant cycle of, you know, innovation and disruption, when you have a product team that's focused on features, I feel like you end up hastening your disruption, your own disruption. Because if you're not taking a really informed approach with research to understand what your customers' needs are, you're not future-proofing yourself. This is where I see some of the issues of where designers can really help to understand and really try to be its own identity within an organization, is to really center, again, on customer needs, on your audience's needs. And we need to be able to push back against engineering or product or marketing or sales. God knows sales can definitely screw things up, because we're trying to meet everyone's needs, and you can't be everything to everybody. That just is a recipe for disaster. And you need to be able to focus on your main audience. And that sometimes means saying no to certain opportunities or certain paths that could be lucrative, but ultimately could put you one step closer to the grave. What am I talking here is that designers need to have their own identity within an organization, and how an organization views design and how they have set up their own mission and values and vision is very telling, because then you can always rely back to that. You can always lean back on the mission, because the mission usually is something kind of high and fluffy about, like, we're trying to create value for our customers. Okay, cool. Designers should always then lean on that. And too often, many people start thinking in their heads, oh, we create this option, or create this feature, or create this service. Okay, cool. How does that help our customer? Designers need to be that, like, bad cop there of being like, how does that help our customer? No, we're not going to do that. Maybe bad cop is a really outmoded way of saying that. Good cop, bad cop. You got to be the heavy. That's it. You got to be the heavy in the room, being like, cool, we can do that. How does that solve our customer needs? And I always come back to, for designers, wherever an idea is coming from, put it through the lens of how this helps solve your customer needs. Because really, any idea can come from anywhere. Could come from sales, could come from product, could come from engineering, come from customer success, could come from design. But if you don't have a strong narrative as to what the problem is and what value that this new thing, this new idea is going to help, then it doesn't really cut the mustard. It doesn't really pass the sniff test. And I feel like a strong organization that always centers on their customers, really focus on that, is a way for designers to really be effective and continue to have their voice held and heard at the table. Sounds like old man yelling at the sky, the thing here, but I don't know. I have been talking with a lot of colleagues and friends, and I'm curious as to what your experiences are. I'm curious as to how you've addressed these in your career, how you've addressed any of these issues that have come up in different organizations. So I am very curious to hear your thoughts on this. And that's why I really appreciate everyone who listens to this show. It does sound, like I said, a little bit like old man yelling at the sky, and I am one person who's had experiences and observations from my small little corner of South Central Pennsylvania. But I really appreciate everyone who listens to these episodes and joins in the conversations on LinkedIn and Twitter, at which you can find the show on LinkedIn. Look it up, Signal 337. We have a business page there. We post every episode there. And on Twitter, it's at Signal 337. So you can join in the conversation there. Now, coming full circle, I'll probably still work on my website. And I will probably make this into a new post, an updated version, to talk about how we can refine our voice at the table. So, with all that, I want to say again, thank you so very much. Everything that I say is from my own observations, my experiences, and they're not indicative of any past or present companies I work with. They're all just out of my own headspace. And with that, I want to say thank you.